And welcome to the Culture Pers podcast in English this time. So because we are talking to Austria in an online session with Sabine Maringer, MA. I see also you're a scientist, also you're a circus artist, and you're a dominatrix. A professional sex worker, as you were introduced, which is an interesting combination, we could say. And we are talking because you will be holding the keynote in the seminar of Festival Circolo in Tilburg next week, on Friday, 13th of October, which has is on the subject of consent. And well, to introduce it a bit, we have in the Netherlands just had the premiere of a movie made by Tamar van der Dop, who is an actress herself, but who has shown the faces of the actors who are involved in erotic scenes in Dutch movies. And she has interviewed them about it, and there were some rather interesting things about generations, younger actors, and especially female actors, who were very glad that since a few years there are now workers on the movie sets, which are especially there for the erotic scenes, and the older generation who found it all a bit too much involvement of other people, which it was interesting. So it is an issue at the moment after also the Me Too affairs. So that's a bit of my context. The issue of consent. I mean, to first start, you, Sabine Maringer, you are all kinds of things at the moment. Tell me a bit about yourself. How did you get involved in circus?
I was starting to work as a light technician when I was very young. And I rapidly made a career and then asked myself, what comes next? I was 24 and I met a German street circus company. And by accident, I fell in love with their technique and with the theater company and the way they lived and shared the community life together. And I moved to Frankfurt, Main. And yeah, this was my step into the circus world. It was not planned. It happened to me, basically. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And also, your other profession next to your studies is that you're a professional sex worker. You're a dominatrix. Can you tell me a bit more about that? How did this come to pass?
I did the last 18 years circus. I had my own company. I was touring a lot in Europe. I was producing in Vienna. And I got tired, basically, about many things regarding to my profession, the touring, the industry, being a female performer, the time management, my body. I got older and I wanted to have a change. I wanted to change profession, and this sex work, it also came to me. I was sitting in the garden with some friends, and she said, basically she had her outcome, and she said, I am a femdom. And I said, what's that? And she explained that to us, and while she was talking, I immediately felt, boom, this is my next profession. Yeah, and then I took workshops, education, classes, and so I made my step into being a dominatrix, professional sex worker.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice, we might say. Last week there was in the paper in Holland an interview with four or five actors and actresses who were also sex workers in their next to their acting career, So it's less strange than it is than it might sound to some people. But so I mean, there's a lot of questions raised at this moment. I mean, you said you were unsatisfied with the way the circus was going, your Korean circus. But then it seems odd to a very normal civilian bystander that you choose for sex work, which is might also be involved with all kinds of nasty things, because the whole sex industry is not also not very popular for its good working conditions, to say at
I
least.
have to say, I can imagine that this is the image that people have, but the reality is I am working in a studio in Vienna. We are a team. We are female-led. That means no male person is involved. We are all self-employed. We make our own decisions. We create our own working environment. I have no one telling me when, what, or how to do. So it's all upon me and my own decisions, limits, and boundaries.
Whoa, yeah, that's powerful. So you came to this idea after a circus career of 18 years. Can you tell us a bit more about how this came to pass and how did this world, the circus world, had such a bad impression on you after your.
I have an example for you. I was in a partner acrobatic duo, and for people who don't see me, I'm 1 meter 75 tall, and I weighed a 68 kilo past in the days. So I'm not a usual partner acrobatic. I don't have a usual partner acrobatic body, and most of the people will think I was the base, but that's not true. I was the flyer, and we were in a female duo, so that was very unconventional. And I had to face a lot of comments. I faced a lot of body shaming. I had
Really?
to deal with a lot of comments from bookers, audience, colleagues, friends, and family about that. So that was
Really?
really hard to take. And then when I stopped being a performer on stage and I changed to being a dominatrix, I gained a little bit of weight. I lost my muscles. And what was so powerful to me was that even though I changed, I got a lot of appreciation from my guests. And in the beginning, it felt completely strange because my body image got destroyed from the industry. I always wished to be a very thin, very small person. And now I'm admired for being who I am.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because also when you said 175 and 68 kilograms, I mean that seems like a perfectly normal person to me, but in
Yes.
circus this is not the case.
No. Not if when you are a flyer in a partner acrobatic duo.
So this, the flyer is the one who gets lifted up and who does all the things above.
Correct.
So was this I mean, circus also, as I got to know it in the past few years, is also a very democratic, a very social sport, an art form which is very much emancipatory also. So, but the image you just gave is much more repressive, for it, much more setting rules for the way you look, the way how much you weigh. Was this also all the time for you that it worked this way?
Yes, I felt that I have to stick to this body image, which I thought one should have being a partner acrobatic person. So I had to deal with eating disorders. I got a lot of traumas regarding my body. Yeah.
And did you see this also around you in other with colleagues? Was this okay?
And this is not just only for persons who identify as female, also for person who identify as male.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there also is like an image person identifying as male should look like, or they think, or it's projected on them.
Yeah. I'm immediately feeling a little bit guilty because now not really guilty, but I had an interview last Sunday with six senior acrobats who were in their 60s. And I complimented them on the way they looked. It was very very sinewy people who could still perform some very scary acts. So I think now, okay, so I was also cooperating in this image building of circus people. Can it change?
I think it is already in a process of changing, but there must be many adjustments to be done, because it's still, I think, or from my perspective, it's still like that different types of bodies are placed in different techniques or fields within the circus. So, and I think people are used to see a specific body with a specific technique. So I think it's also upon the circus schools and also the social circus schools to ask people with different body types to try different techniques. And if then people with different body types go the professional way and make a career and they will be seen on stage, then also the audience and the bookers will change their perception, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have to start at the very beginning so that we encourage people with different body types to be part of the circus.
Yeah.
People with different body types are capable of the same things. They just might look a little bit different to what we now think that it should look like. Or we are educated, trained, or we get used to it. So, yeah.
Yeah, because you were living proof of that someone of 175 and 68 kilograms could fly. Also in acrobatics.
I mean, and we had to do our adjustments. So my female partner, she was not able to do every trick with me, and I wasn't able to do every trick with her. So we really had to see what are we capable of and where are our boundaries, and to accept them also. and to see how can we work around our limits and boundaries and capabilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was also the point at with the senior acrobats, the people in their 60s, that they also had to work around their limitations.
Yes.
Now this, I think that there is also in when the subject of consent,
yes,
we always have the subject of the audience, which is very demanding, or which is supposed to be very demanding, which is, or who the secret artists think they are very demanding. They want higher, better, faster, more dangerous. I saw an image on a festival in Vienna, I think, about a circus artist who, in the beginning of the last century, went crossing the Danube River, I think, on a tightrope, and then fell into it because he thought the audience wanted more. I mean, how do you cope with that? You have teachers, you have audiences, you have producers who want the best and the most, and you have a certain idea of what's the best in them and things.
Yeah, I think this is a reflection of the society we live in. Higher, faster, bigger, whoop, whoop, whoop. But, you know, where does this lead us? I mean, there is a limit somewhere. And I can imagine that instead of going more dangerous or more higher or more extreme to see what's inside us, which narratives can we tell in circus, which topics can we tackle and speak about? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So on consent, yeah, you'll be holding the keynote. Not giving, oh, you can give something away because not everyone who is listening here will be at the keynote. So yeah, what will it be about?
It will be about speaking about ideas, how a consent culture in circus can look like. Because I cannot give answers right now, because we are at the very beginning. We are at the beginning where we start to speak with each other about this topic, because it's so new and so fresh, and the idea of consent is something that we maybe a little bit already use, but just to a minimal extent. And I will hopefully encourage the people to bring the idea of consent culture to their schools, productions, groups, and training centers.
And what does consent mean in this context?
You mentioned in the introduction that there are these so-called intimacy coaches, which are there to help actors in a production, movie, theater, whatever, to feel comfortable when they engage in scenes that are sexual or very physical in a sexual way. I think this is a really good first step, but you can apply consent to basically every situation. And this is not only about intimacy or sexuality. It's also about how one will be presented on stage, about the roles and the character one is performing. It's also about, especially in performing arts, it's about which costume do I wear? Do I really feel confident in it? Can I be really free? And about the choreography itself, about which body parts am I really confident showing to the audience? And is there a possibility to change the choreography so that I don't have to show specific body parts to an audience. I just refer here to a split, which is really common in dance and circus. So, but if a female identifying person or a male identifying person does a split, basically it's a pornographic act because you show your vagina and your ass hole, even though it's covered, to complete all the audience.
Yep.
And do I really feel confident with that? Or can we adjust the choreography so that it's not happening and you can see from the back? Because everybody already knows, okay, she does a split. So do I really have to take a close look into her vagina, even though it's hiding?
Yeah.
And it's also about when you are in an educational situation. So when a teacher asks someone to show a specific game or a choreography, you are pleased to do that. We're trained to say yes, yes, I'm performing this exercise in front of everyone. But I can remember that I felt a lot of time not confident doing it, but I did it because my teacher forced me to do it. And there was no culture of giving my consent. I felt I need to do it because then maybe I'm rejected from the next class, or when I'm at the audition and I'm asked to do specific things, I feared not to get the job because I am expressing a no. And consent is also about how would I, as a person, would like to be approached by another person? I don't like to be hugged by specific people. Maybe it's just an hello, a verbal greeting, or shaking hands, or whatever. It starts really with the bare, like the basic of encountering and relationship between people. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in this film I saw by Tamar van den Dopter, the older actors, they said, well, art is also about extending your limitations, about crossing borders, about, I mean, this is what they say. It's also a discussion here. It's not my my point of view, but it is in discussion about this consent thing. They say, well, if everything is with consent, we only get very tame, very lame art. We want something to cross borders. We want to. How do you? I mean, if teachers on school say, well, you have to, if you experience a limit, then you have to cross it. That's standard procedure in schools in with physical arts. How do you?
Yes.
Does this have to change?
I know that we are forced to cross boundaries and stretch our limits. And I think basically there is nothing bad about the idea, but we need a safe space and a space of consent to be able to feel guided and safe and seen to cross boundaries maybe. And I think it's much easier for people to cross boundaries if they want to, when they also have the possibility to say, no, I don't. If I do that, I will hurt myself. And often being not aware and crossing a personal boundary and limit can, in the end, produce a trauma for this person, and we don't want that. I know this is this idea of you have to give more and more and more, but is this really true? And then I have a second thought. It's about, okay, if we are not forced to cross boundaries, where do we get then our energy, our interest of going further from? So what is then our driven energy we use to do that? So I think we will then have to change also to find how to then work and train, and yeah, we have to find a new source of energy for doing things when it's not being forced.
Can you tell us a bit about the source of energy?
Yes. Yeah, you too.
Yeah, go ahead. What's the source of energy? Where can you find this source?
Passion, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But not a passion where I have to feel pain to create, but a passion that comes from my deepest heart and interest of things, and from a place where I feel safe to step back, to stop, to step aside, to reflect, and to change my mind.
Mm-hmm. Is this what you've learned from becoming a sex worker, a dominatrix? Because it seems to me that this is a kind of involvement in which things you have to consent to is very much more regulated, I think, almost than in circus.
Yeah. So how I connected the idea of circus and consent, basically, it was not my idea. It was a conversation I had with a person who is organizing sex positive parties in Vienna, and I am giving workshops on those parties to introduce newcomers to the idea of BDSM. And we were, after my performance, having an after work drink at the bar, and we were talking about my past life, and I told her about being a circus artist and the past career I made. And then out of the blue, she asked me, "Hey, I'm interested. Do you have a culture of consent in circus?" And I was like, "Wait, I have to think." And then I had to say no. And she said, "Yeah, but why? You're so physical. You're so close. You share so much intimacy, also not only by sharing the body, but also sharing your thoughts and imagination and the space together. Why don't you have that?" And I had no answer at this moment. And I felt like, yes, this is the missing link to create a safe space to make the circus environment a better place, let's say so, a little bit. For everyone, yeah. And for everyone, I mean really everyone. And it's not about the artists. It's also about the cultural worker, the people who run the festivals, the people who work on festivals, or teachers, everyone, and the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we, the audience, need a little bit of training too, I think. Because I've been a professional theater critic all my life, since my early 30s, and I know also that a lot of, well, that dance, modern dance performers also recognize sometimes older men in the audience who were not there because they were lovers of the technique of dance. They were lovers of scarcely dressed women performing strange things. I mean, this is something that's hardly ever talked about, but it's certainly happening, I think, in theater, in especially in Dutch theater, where, well, nudity is quite often performed. So there's also a way of well, that it's still not really, it's hardly ever talked about. And you say we should talk about it.
Yeah, we should talk about it. So I think if I can use it in my daily practice as a dominatrix, everyone can apply that to their daily practice of their profession. The thing is, consent culture needs time and the willingness to reflect upon your own boundaries and needs. And it needs the braveness in a society where we are asked to say yes, to express a no. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what consent culture makes so difficult, I think, when you think about it the first time, is that also for us, and also for me still, though, yeah, receiving a no can hurt. But we have to change our perception of getting a no. If we change it to, thanks for giving me a no, this is a gift because you were honest, you stayed true to yourself, thank you for this moment, then we can change it. And the no is also always a chance to get in action and to reshape a certain moment, yeah, or a certain activity we are in. So everyone included feels welcome, seen, respected, and safe.
This sounds great. It sounds also very easy, but I think in practice, this still is. It's how can you train people to how can you change this mindset?
Yeah. It's, I think, like changing a habit, you need to practice, fail, practice, and fail till it gets a habit. We are not, it's not what a part of our habits in a social encounter to do so. So no one can expect from no one, I think, that they can change from one second to the other. Because, yeah, changing habits is work. And you have to invest. And especially with consent culture, you have to do your personal work. You have to sit down and reflect on past situations. How did I feel? And what do I really wish for myself? And then stay true to that. And also the nice effect of a consent culture is that maybe if the whole environment changes, my no can also change into a yes, because I feel safe with a certain group or person or surrounding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on this Friday the seminar, you will also be giving workshops. How does a workshop work like that?
So we will have during this seminar four great workshop topics. And I have to mention the other ones also because they're so important. We will basically give a 360 overview about consent culture in circus. So let's start with one of my colleagues. She will have, I think it will be more like clear discussion about the consent culture between artists and audience. We will have a workshop about consent culture in the training setting between the teacher and the student. And we will have a workshop where they will talk about consent culture in the professional production of the creation of a performance, I think. And I will focus on you as a person. So we will work on creating a language to talk about your boundaries and limits. We will think about different contexts and also situations, because I think if when we talk about touch, to be touched from one person in a specific situation does not mean that from another person in another situation it's the same. And we will try to create a landscape of touch to get to know my body and my needs regarding touch better. And we will have a lot of games to experience giving consent or expressing a no and how to deal with that emotionally. Yes. So my workshop is basically about oneself.
It sounds very interesting. Well, I will be in a train next Friday, so I can't be there. I hope some of my colleagues will be there.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I think this is a great thing to experience. Also for people outside the circus business, I think that.
Of course, I think it's if you this idea of consent culture can apply to families, your friends, some leisure time activity groups, wherever, you know, if you like, you can apply it everywhere.
Yeah.
And one interesting thing, I sent a friend who I think is capable of giving me the feedback about this speech. I sent them like the outline of my speech, and he said, "Whoa, you will shock those people."
Really?
Yeah, he said, "Well, you will shock them, and be aware that a lot of people will have the difficulties, maybe, with what you will say, because you will turn the circus world upside down."
Whoa.
And so, I'm really interested if it's true or not. I'm so excited how the people will perceive this idea of consent culture, which I will present to them on next Friday. Really, I'm curious.
Yeah. Because, so you will go further in that than we have just discussed in this podcast.
Yeah.
You have something up your sleeve.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, okay.
Of course.
Okay, so that makes this extra special to be there for people. I was wondering still, because combining the sex work and this, because you're an MA, you also have done a study.
I studied. I made my master in performing public space. And that's very great because I made my master in the Fontys University in Tilburg.
Okay.
So yes, so I'm coming back to the university where I made my master, and this is for me a really great honor to come back as a keynote speaker, even though it has nothing to do with the topic. But yeah, I feel very great, and also one of my colleagues, she will give also a workshop during this seminar day. So yeah, I'm really happy.
great party, I think. I think it's very nice because at the same time that you're giving this keynote and you're doing your research, you're also working on sort of liberating this whole taboo about sex work. I mean, because that I think, did you experience any trouble telling about this combination of you being in BDSM and circus and doing a very serious keynote about a very important subject?
I feel like it makes easier for people to connect me and the topic because I am a dominatrix and a sex worker, and because consent is in my profession everything. It's the outline, it's the base. It's if there is no consent, I cannot work. So consent is the frame I'm working in, and I think this makes it easier for the people. And also I think nowadays you are not so charged for being a sex worker. And also I feel having an MA in the back, having an artistic career in the back, makes it easier for people to still respect me as a person being a sex worker. I think that helps somehow the people to say, oh yeah, okay, she changed, but she's not forced to do that. That's her decision, her personal decision. So interesting. So, okay, I experience a lot of curiosity from the people. Openness also to listen. And within, I think also that in this creative industry, people are more open. I don't know how it would be in different contexts. Yeah, but here I feel really free to say whom I am in my professional life now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I mean, we are nearing the 45 minutes, which stands for this podcast.
Okay, fine.
We could talk about this for hours, I think, but you will be talking about this for hours on Friday in Tilburg.
No, not for hours, for 40 minutes.
40 minutes, also 40 minutes. So, okay. So there'll be more in Tilburg then. I would like to thank you very much for your openness and your willingness to have this talk. So people can still go to the seminar. I don't think it's sold out yet. So thank you very much, Sabine Meyinger. And is there any last thought you would like to give to our listeners?
I would like to thank you for your really good questions. I felt they were opening a good conversation between us.
Thank you.
And forced me to talk about my topic really open. It's really nice. I felt you created a really safe, a nice atmosphere for me to feel seen and safe to speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well, then we end on a very high note to say this. We'll end with a closing tune, and then have a great Friday, and we'll maybe see each other then later.
Hopefully.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay.